This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Today is World AIDS Day, a day that carries enormous weight for so many of us, for so many reasons. And while we honour the stories, the losses and the resilience, we also look forward because behind the scenes, the science is moving quickly, sometimes quietly, and sometimes in ways that surprise even the experts. So this afternoon, we're taking a clear, calm look at where things actually stand right now, treatments, long-acting prevention, vaccines, and what all that might mean for our future. And joining us is Adjunct Professor James McMahon, Head of Clinical Research Unit at the Department of Infectious Diseases, Alfred Hospital and Monash University. James, welcome to Drive.
Thank you for having me.
When you look across treatment, prevention and research, what feels most different to, say, compared to 5 or even 10 years ago?
There's lots of things that are changing. And thanks so much for having me on the show today. It's a really important day for our whole community. There's a lot of different treatment options. We've got great treatment for people with HIV in terms of, daily oral pills, but taking one pill a day. But we've started into this era of now there are other treatments available that can work just as well as oral pills daily that don't have to be taken every day. So we have injections that people can have every 2 months, which obviously doesn't suit some people to have an injection versus a pill. But if you don't want to take pills every day, that's an option for people. And then we sort of have some trials of other options. 6 monthly treatments, which you believe are being trialed now with quite good results, but they have to have an infusion, and then things like weekly oral medication as well, so one pill once a week. So there is lots of new options coming for people with HIV in terms of treatment.
And if you think about the early days when antiretrovirals became available, there was always lots of resistance, people experiencing resistance to certain classes of drugs, therefore being limited in terms of options. Does that still happen with the new treatments that are happening?
No, we're extremely fortunate, nowhere near as often as previously, because the daily oral medications that we've got available to us are extremely effective and potent at pushing the virus right down to very low levels and not leading to that issue of the virus sort of popping up again and getting that resistance. So, no, we're very fortunate. It still is an issue, but it's nowhere near as big as an issue it was 10, 15, 20 years ago.
So, James, for someone newly diagnosed today, what does long-term treatment and health actually look like?
I was doing clinic this week and talking to someone newly diagnosed with HIV about the life that's ahead of them. And it's really obviously a very stressful experience finding out that you have HIV. And it's a very difficult taking information in that setting. We try and keep the message very simple, actually, initially. And the main concern, would you believe, obviously, is about individuals' mental health and the stresses that they'll be going under with that information. But the message is people who are diagnosed today with HIV who are relatively well when they're diagnosed live a normal, healthy life. And they have to take that medication every day, which is very well tolerated. So we try and have that as the main positive message, and it's true, and we really emphasise that. There's still, as you know, in the community, there are stigma associated with HIV. It is a stressful experience to receive that information for many people. So, we're very focused on people's mental health and they're adjusting to that period of their lives, which obviously many things will change. But for the medical health, purely from that side of things, it's a really positive message we're able to give, which is great.
And James, of course, we have PrEP available, but there is a lot of discussion around long-acting PrEP. Can you tell us about that?
Long-acting PrEP, it looks to be an absolute game changer. The drug that had remarkable results presented in the last couple of years is a drug called lenacapavir, which was injections given every 6 months, and it's been studied in women and men, transgender individuals as well, and incredibly effective at stopping people acquiring HIV. We do not have access to that at the moment in Australia. There's another monthly injectable PrEP option called cabotegravir, which has very limited access. And to be honest, one of the reasons that we don't have access at the moment, although there are submissions in with the federal government to get these drugs approved and funded, but The other option is oral daily PrEP or PrEP on demand, but those taking a Truvada or a TDF-FTC pill every day, it's incredibly effective when taken and it's extremely cheap. So, you know, the way the drug approval system works in Australia is that it's got to be efficacious and it's got to be cost effective. So there are submissions, you know, going in to the TGA and also, you know, trying to get that cost effectiveness threshold across the line. It would be amazing for us to have access to lenacapavir. It's already available in some countries globally. Off patent in some lower and middle income countries and also in some high income countries. And we really hope that it can really help to, you know, make a further dent in the numbers of people acquiring HIV.
We're chatting with Adjunct Professor James McMahon, Head of Clinical Research at the Alfred Hospital and Monash University, about the future of HIV treatments, prevention, and we'll get on to cure shortly. James, let's talk about vaccine work. It's had its ups and downs across the decades. Right now, what feels promising?
Look, it's interesting. I'm at a wonderful World AIDS Day event being held at the Alfred Hospital, actually in Burnett Institute, and all day we have a wonderful day commemorating people that have been lost, but also looking at where we are and taking step. And the actual our guest speaker, our invited special speakers, come from the United States, Jeannie Marazzo. She was the sixth director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the National Institute of Health. That was the job that Tony Fauci had. Many of you know of Tony Fauci through COVID. So Jeannie took that job, but she has been removed from that position formally a couple of months ago. And she just presented today on, you know, the amount, the huge amount of funding that's gone into vaccine research. And she was very positive about things in the next 5 to 10 years to really make a big step forward in a vaccine. But to be honest, you know, the elephant in the room is that a huge amount of the funding for HIV vaccine research has been provided by the US government, and that funding has largely been removed or heavily cut back. So looking for people, other parts of the world or philanthropy to fill that hole. But there is still a lot of work done, in short, on HIV vaccine research. And Jeannie gave a very positive message today, but we don't, you know, we don't have an effective vaccine to prevent HIV, but, you know, it's still an active area of work.
When we think of the funding that's been cut by the US, does that present an opportunity for Australia's research institutes to take up that gap and lead the way?
Look, it does, but the issue is that the US government, to be honest, was just the largest funder of institutional government-funded research globally compared to any other government, and they had been disproportionately high funders of HIV research or through the Department of AIDS at the NIH. So, there's been a lot of change, and we don't really know, I suppose, how that will flow out. But we do know that, you know, that a lot of treatment programs, AIDS also being cut, treatment programs around treatment and prevention have been cut in many countries of the world. We would hope that there are technologies also, like lenacapavir you mentioned, could help fill some of that gap in terms of prevention. But there's a lot of distress, you know, in some of those large US institutions, the National Institute of Health, the CDC, about the cuts that have been made, particularly around HIV funding and research. That's really unfortunate.
James, let's talk about cure research. How realistic is a cure for HIV?
Look, we're very optimistic that one day there'll be a cure for HIV, but the very nature of research is that it's impossible really to predict when that will be. And I know that's sort of disheartening, and it would be great to say that a cure would be here at this point. I mean, people probably are listening to the show have been hearing about when we're going to get an HIV vaccine multiple times, and it's not happened. But it's just an honest, I had this discussion with patients at the clinic, actually, that the very nature of research is people are doing things where they don't have the answer. And you get this big stepwise moment often where a big breakthrough will occur, and that would really accelerate and advance the field. So, and they typically will get be highly advertised. So look, HIV cure research, it's an active area of research. There's a lot of motivation still, actually. The community, the positive community is very supportive of the work. And you can say, like, oh, we've got excellent treatment, you know, especially long-acting treatment, why would we need to go down that path? But actually, there's a lot of people in the HIV community who still like, no, this is a really important thing to do. If we could be someone living without the need for any treatment because we've got another intervention that can control HIV without the need for daily antivirals, and that's a really big step. And so there still isn't a huge amount of interest in HIV cure. And looking really, to be honest, the main focus at the moment is a lot of interventions or medications? Can we control the virus without the need for the antiviral drugs? And we've got trials at the Alfred Hospital, for example, at the moment that are testing such things, so people can always reach out to us and if they're interested in being involved in those sorts of studies.
In terms of trials happening at the moment, what sort of trials are happening?
An example one I was sort of mentioning was actually a lot of the trials actually, would you believe, they repurpose drugs that are being used for treating cancer. And the reason for that is that a lot of modern cancer therapies actually are trying to fire up the immune system, if you like, to see this small residual amount of cancer that's left behind and get the immune system to target that and remove it. And there's an analogy to HIV in that there's actually not much HIV virus in someone with HIV who's on their antiviral medicines. It's actually, the immune system can't really see it, but it's hanging out there in low numbers. So the drugs, for example, are looking to, again, sort of hype up the immune system to see the remaining virus. But we need to use those drugs in a safe way, and we need to find drugs that have got very low toxicity and safer than with HIV, because people with HIV on antiviral medicine are well, and they're not exposed to a lot of toxicity, which is a very different situation as someone with cancer who can, the threshold to accept adverse effects or toxicity is a lot higher.
James.
So, yeah, they're the main focus at the moment on those sorts of medications.
Where does the virus hide in individuals who are on treatment, who are undetectable? What parts of the body?
Yeah, it hides in tissues. So it's not when it's undetectable in the blood, but the main tissues it hangs out of are the lymph nodes or the glands. You know, your glands go up in your neck or your armpits or your groin. When you get a cold or something like that, or another viral infection can happen when you get HIV as well. And there's a lot of those in the gut. And it lives there. It lives mainly in CD4 T cells. But that's the cell that the virus infects. It's its target cell. And that cell happens to run your immune system. And there's little bits of it, even one of the antiviral medicines, that are in these cells, in these lymph nodes through the body at low numbers. And if the antiviral medication stopped, it just can randomly come to life and start making viruses again and infecting other cells. So, yeah, that's where it's hanging out, we think.
Now, it is World AIDS Day 2025. We know it's an important day for yourself. What message do you wish everyone listening today could carry into conversation with friends, family or community? What would you like that to be?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, I would love everyone to think about HIV and remember the people that have gone before us. I'd like to paint a really positive picture about the lives of people with HIV. We have remarkable tools to prevent HIV with PrEP, as you mentioned, and treatment. And I think another thing I'd like to say is we need to remember the stigma associated with HIV. And just by talking about it, to be honest, by doing what we're doing today, we reduce that stigma, we normalise HIV for people living with that, so they don't experience that that prejudice and those that stigma in the community in their day-to-day lives. I also think it's really important today to think about what's going on in our region. We've got a huge HIV epidemics happening around us, particularly in the Pacific and PNG. The fastest growing epidemic in the world actually is currently in Fiji. There and PNG's declared a health crisis for HIV. So we have a lot of positive messages here, but there's a lot of work to do here, but also in our region, and we need to support. We've got a moral obligation and to support our friends and colleagues in these different parts of the world. So I think we need to remember that and think about that at this time. And thankfully that the Australian government committed some more funding last week to that effort in the Pacific around the HIV response, a $48 million announcement by Penny Wong. So that's a really important start, but there'll be a lot of work to do in the coming years in our region, sure.
James, thank you so much for chatting with us on Drive today.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. That is Adjunct Professor James McMahon, Head of Clinical Research at the Alfred Hospital and Monash University.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.